Like you need techies to fix your problems. And you'll get your segment if you're willing to ante up the jack.
No, what I need are competent men and women capable of fortifying freedom. Word is out. I'm hiring qualified mercies. But word travels slow, and now I'm making do with a few good men and a lot of cannon fodder with itchy trigger fingers blowing the heads off visitors who try and steal from merchants instead of arresting them so we can confiscate their possessions in jack. A dead man is of no use to anyone.
I have to disagree with you there, Morgan. In fact, the thought has crossed my mind that there's nothing in here to keep me from gutting you like a fish or putting a bullet in your head. By the time your segment outside could squeeze out from behind the desk, you'd be a dead man. That could solve a lot of problems.
Oh, really? Well, killing me would just result in the deaths of your son and your friend. Understand, I'm trying to be polite here, but if you fuck with me, freedom is the last place you'll ever see again. Alive, at least.
Didn't say I was gonna do it. I just said what was keeping me from doing it. I could take you hostage.
Enough with the theories, Carter. Look, I'm being honest with you. There is a sticky situation to be dealt with, all right? I need your help in handling them. Your people...
They aren't my people, Morgan.
Ryan rose to his feet and began to pace in front of the desk, in annoyance and worry over his son.
What they are to me are my friends, and my friends do as they please.
Surely they have loyalty to you.
Stop right there. There's a big difference between loyalty and ownership. You speak of them like they were my slaves or something. Not even close. We travel together because we care about one another and don't have to worry about waking up with a blade in our backs. I know trust is a double hard thing to find anymore, but I guess that's what holds us together. We trust one another.
Then I trust they'll stand by your request for a favor. For your son's sake. And for the albinos.
Despite Morgan's lament over a lack of good help, the Sekhmen in the holding pens knew their jobs. Ryan Sigsauer and Pongo were both taken at the front desk, and he was carefully patted down in a full body search, where the thin knife hidden at the base of his back was also revealed and taken until his visit was over. The Sekhmen who took it shrugged at Ryan.
It's for your own safety. Prisoners get hold of a weapon might use it on you first. It happens.
Right.
Ryan felt naked after being relieved of his weapons, but there was no other way to gain access to Dean. He was taken to a screened room divided in halves by a thick woven mesh, similar to fencing he'd seen around outdoor sec areas. On the other side of the visiting room, a door opened and a pale Dean walked out, alone and unescorted. Ryan pressed close to the wire and realized he could see and touch Dean, but only through the half-inch hole of the strong metallic material. What was obviously a one-way mirror dominated a sidewall. Ryan suspected that the Sekhmen who admitted him into this visitor center was keeping watch from behind the glass. He fought the relieved smile that wanted to curve his lips.
Knew you two were going to get into trouble the minute I laid eyes on you last night. They treating you okay?
Extra special. Jack, too. Hot food, clean bunk, no creeps or pervs. Nicest cell I ever been stuck in, far as cells go.
Morgan had been honest about that much of the forced bargain anyway, Ryan thought to himself. He gestured to the chairs, one per side, and father and son sat down facing each other.
Quiet in here.
Not in the cells. Some drunk keeps singing all about moons hitting eyes and big pizza pies.
Every place like this has got a drunk, Dean.
I guess.
You want to tell me what happened? Take it slow, and don't leave anything out.
Not much to tell. We were in the vid arcade, watching some guys play a game. They'd given us static when we first got there. When they left to get more tokens to play, me and Jack tried the game out. They came back and started spouting some crap that it was their game.
There's gotta be more to it than that.
You bet there is. One of the shits pulled a knife on Jack. And this kid's friend, the slightly smaller shit, pulled a blaster and was gonna shoot Jack from behind. I had no choice, Dad. I had to shoot him to keep him from chilling Jack.
Yeah. No choice. You were right.
Later at the main sec office, all of Ryan's inner circle, except for Dean, stood before the seated sec leader Rollins.
Looks like we're working for you now.
Glad to have you on board. I got the word from Mr. Morgan. I understand you two worked out a deal.
If you want to call it that.
You want sec jackets? Armor?
Not really. We're not going to be strolling around busting local problems at Gaudy's or hassling cart vendors. We're here to help you with any sticky attacks, and to maybe assist in the training of your greener men.
Well, that would probably be two-thirds of my current squad.
Honestly, How big a crew are you running?
That's on a need-to-know basis.
Don't give me that crap. You want my help, I need to know. We all do.
All right. Let's talk while we move. I'll show you the armory and the training areas.
The big man stood up and led the way. Ryan and the companions kept sharp eyes out, assessing everything they saw for strategy.
There are 20 full-time sec men and 10 reserve. Usually, we work active sec details on the exterior of the mall and the surrounding areas in and around Freedom's perimeter during daylight. Day exterior shifts run 12 hours from 8 in the morning to 8 at night.
What about inside?
Different kind of sec men. We're more of a presence in here to remind our guests to behave. Day patrols on the mall interior on a light duty roster. Most of our hard labor comes after dark, both on the inside after people start drinking and the outside when the muties get restless. More often than not, people on the inside of Freedom have no clue there's a problem outdoors. That's the way we want to keep it.
They stepped into the former mall loading dock that had been taken over with targets, tumbling mats, and exercise equipment. A few sealed wooden cases of weapons could be seen in a corner, locked up in a fenced-in area. Some of Rollins's regular sec squad were working out. JB frowned at the few number of men.
How does a night shift break down?
If you work days, the shift is longer because there's lower stress. Work nights, you can go from 8 to 4 in the morning, or from midnight to 8. There's some overlap. That's on purpose, since it falls at the same time we tend to have the most problems. Sticky activity usually hits between midnight and 2 a.m., although they've been known to come earlier and try again later.
Ryan traded glances with JB, who shrugged, then leaned against a rack of barbells and eyed Rollins.
Okay, here's the way we're gonna do this. We'll all stay on the night shift with patrolling and training. I don't give a shit for day duty if the action always comes after sunset. Give us a few days to get acclimated, meet your men, and we'll try playing school. JB here can talk hardware. I'm on tactics with JB. Jack over there might not look like much, but he's the finest hand-to-hand fighter I've ever known. All of us have been involved in close combat fights with Stickies before and survived, so it's not impossible. Stickies might be scary to some, but they're also triple stoop. Usually you can outsmart them.
What's standard armament for your sec men?
M16 long blasters. M16 A2s, to be exact.
Chamber to take 5.56 millimeter rounds?
Right.
The M16 was the traditional weapon of the smart sec man or hired mercies. The effective range of the now classic army weapon was just under 350 yards. It could be fired in four modes: on single shot, semi-auto, automatic, or full cycle. Capable of firing close to 1,000 rounds of ammunition per minute, keeping an M16 on full cycle would empty a full 30-round magazine in under 2 seconds.
Got a few extras of the M16 if you want them, but there's not much ammo. We're lacking in that department. Haven't gotten a new supply in months.
Which explains why the blaster and ammo store we went to earlier had been closed.
Yeah, we had to confiscate his stores. The man was paid, of course.
Of course.
Been meaning to ask you, Dr. Wyeth. Why do you keep carrying around a target pistol? We could fix you up with an auto blaster with no problem.
Mildred hefted the ZKR 551 six-shot Czech revolver and sighted an imaginary target before sliding it back into its holster.
I've always been a believer in staying with what you know, and I know this revolver. Know how it feels, know how it shoots. I can draw, aim, and fire without even thinking and hit my target time and time again with this blaster. Switch to something new, even with an increased bullet capacity, and by the time I learned it as well as I know this gun, I'd probably be dead. Also, I like simplicity. The double-action revolver is a self-loading design, allowing the operator to cock the hammer and rotate the cylinder simultaneously, and then release the hammer with one trigger pull. Or if I choose, I can thumb-cock this baby like an old single-action revolver. And I always know how many bullets I have. With an auto, you have to count.
Not if you have enough clips.
Outside, extra ammo isn't usually an option. A revolver is easy to operate. The ammo in the chamber is clearly visible and never, ever misfires. If a shell jams, you just keep pulling the trigger and rotate the cylinder to the next shell. If you keep trying to blast away with an automatic, you have to stop, eject, and remove the dud by hand.
Give me a good automatic any day.
To each his own. Like I said, the extra shots don't mean much in that kind of situation. My pistol has a smooth trigger action, again adding to the accuracy. And in a pinch, I can fire a variety of bullet loads, even though this one's been chambered to take a Smith & Wesson 38 caliber round. Try doing that with a 5.56 millimeter auto.
You make it sound damn near perfect. Although that hand cannon is bulky and takes much longer to reload compared to an automatic. Auto loaders help, but you still lose seconds opening up the chamber, lining up the bullets, and closing shop. And we both know the velocity falls short of an auto pistol. High muzzle velocity will always provide the maximum penetration.
Why, Mr. Rollins, perhaps you know more about guns than you're letting on.
Could be.
JB glowered at Rollins, an uncharacteristic twinge of jealousy making him grind his teeth a little.
What do you got stockpiled?
Not as much as I'd like. We did have more, but a lot of the good stuff has been used previously. Mr. Morgan had more blasters and ammo on order from a baron upstate who was open to trading, but they never arrived.
Hope the Stickies didn't end up attacking a convoy and getting the damn things.
You and me both.
Downtown Winston-Salem, North Carolina, was a morass of skyscrapers and smaller buildings aligned in a boxy grid network. During the boom years, it was known as the city that tobacco built, and locals wore the label with pride, until smoking became a habit less and less tolerated by the general public. Harvested crops went unsold, and advertising avenues continued to dry up, until finally the use of tobacco in the United States became an almost underground movement. The tobacco companies found their salvation in overseas sales. Asian companies, as well as the former Soviet bloc countries, had always had a lustful gleam in their respective eyes for the various brands of American cigarettes. When the big business of tobacco found that their own country was more than willing to cast them out, and the special interests and bought and paid for friendships had evaporated with the prevailing political climate, there was no looking back. And Winston-Salem was never the same again. This area of North Carolina hadn't been struck with the explosive force and precision of the mighty Earthshaker bombs during that cold January in the year 2001, nor had nuclear devices been detonated anywhere nearby. Some chem warfare had been launched a little further south, but of a form and fashion that only killed off the surviving humans in rapid fashion, while leaving the buildings and machinery and other non-living constructs intact. The primary Sticky base in this part of Carolina was located way downtown in a ramshackle old tobacco warehouse on Liberty Street. The large double doors were padlocked shut, but there was a private back entrance that allowed full access to open space within. A wide open space that housed an entire community of the freakish mutants. Many of the muties were quiet, half sleeping from inactivity and boredom, loath to step outside into the sunlight. A more active splinter group was seated in a semicircle made of old recliner chairs and sofas. One Sticky waved a hand, blinking large, vacant eyes.
Norms.
A period of time passed while damaged, rat-altered, and inbred brain cells tried to shake themselves into providing enough energy to fire the necessary pinprick burst of electricity for another coherent thought. 5 minutes passed, maybe six. There were no complaints. Many Stickies had no concept of time. Sun up and sun down was the extent of how their own internal biological clocks ticked. Stickies needed very little sleep due to their higher body metabolisms. The only thing fast about them were the killing rages they could be induced into by high stress and fireworks and explosions. The Sticky waved his hand again, struggling with thought.
Norms suck.
Yeah, you said it. Took you long enough, but you said it for all of us.
Other Stickies started waving their hands and blinking at each other.
Norms are pussies.
Could go for some norm pussy.
Rough sex with a norm was always a treat, and they knew that the mall was full of succulent norm flesh. One or two of the slower Stickies were aroused and turned their attention to more immediate fulfillment. One of the Stickies' mouth fell open as his right arm worked his arousal. He looked at himself with approval as he tugged and pulled to create the enjoyable feelings. The second Sticky involved in self-gratification wasn't paying any heed. He was involved with his own pleasure, preferring a softer, gentler touch that left him unaware of his surroundings.
I don't believe this. playing with yourselves again? If you're so horny, go find a muty slut. Just spare me the sight of you guys flogging your logs for the amusement of your fellow muties.
Norm and Bud came out of the small office near the semicircle of furniture.